Today we are going to finish the chapter that we started yesterday about the transcriptional regulation at the level of core promoters. So we'll talk a little bit more about different levels of regulation of transcription at the level of promoter. And in particular, there are three topics that I would like to introduce. The first one is the role of CpG methylation. Then we'll just touch upon the role of nucleosome positioning. And then we'll finish up with some discussion about the role of RNA pausing in regulating transcription. So starting with CpG methylation, I'm sure you are all aware of the fact that DNA can be methylated. CpG methylation is epigenetic modification of DNA that occurs when a methyl group is added on a nucleotide. Usually it's the cytosine that is methylated on position 5 with the addition of a methyl group. This reaction is mediated by DNA methyl transferases. There are a few of them. They're called DNMTs. There seem to be some specificity of different DMTs in performing de novo methylation versus maintenance methylation. Even though there is some discrepancy in the literature, more recent data suggest that actually each of the DMTs can do both jobs. There may be a preference in different systems. The novel methylation is when in a region that is fully unmethylated gets methylated, starting with one of the two strands, whereas the maintenance methylation is when DNA that is methylated only on one strand gets methylated, fully methylated also on the other one. Cytosines are not methylated throughout the genome. They are specifically methylated when there is a dinucleotide sequence, a C next to a G. And that's what we refer to as a CpG. The reason for this P in the middle can be a little bit confusing, is a phosphate group. It just means that between the C and the G there is a phosphate. Now the phosphate is present between every nucleotide. If there is an A next to it, is the same thing. So if one wants to be fully correct, when you describe a sequence, a linear sequence, you could say A, P, T, P, G, P, C. The reason why here the consensus is to call them CpG is because people want to focus the attention on the fact that these are CGs that are next to each other in the linear sequence rather than CGs that are facing each other on the two strands. So the other feature is that the C is methylated only when it's on the 5 prime of this dinucleotide sequence. So if there is a G PC, that is not a site for methylation. Okay, so the interesting thing about CpGs is that they are, if you look at the entire genome, you find a much lower frequency of CpG sequences than you would expect based on the random chances of bases combining in different ways. So the frequency of CpGs is much lower than the frequency of all the other combination of dinucleotide sequences. And this is not random. It's due to the fact that CpGs are actually excluded from the genome. There is a specific suppression of CpGs. And the reason is because when the C is methylated, it's subject to deamination. It's transformed into a thymidine, and then the thymidine is removed by the repair process. So through this mutagenic process, CGs have been removed, suppressed in terms of general sequences from the human genome, as well as other genomes where methylation of DNA occurs. There are some areas where you still find CpGs. There are some random interspersed CpGs throughout the genome, and those are normally methylated, most of them. So when you find CpGs on exon sequences or across endogenic sequences, those are usually methylated. However, there are also regions where, and those are still underrepresented compared to what you would expect based on random calculation. However, there are also regions like these ones where there are a cluster of CpGs together. Those are called CpG islands. And the interesting features about CpG islands is that they are usually concentrated at the star site of coding genes. This is something that shouldn't surprise you, because we have seen yesterday that when people analyzed the core promoters of genes genome-wide, they found that the large majority of genes have this broad type of organization where there is an enrichment in CpGs content at the promoter level, where only 20% of the genes have those other single peak type of architecture, which is reduced in CpG content. So about 70, if you calculate, about 20% are the classic data box with the single peak. The other, the 70-80%, are regions, are genes that are enriched in CpG sequences. And in particular, they are enriched in what is called CpG islands. The other feature about these, so there are also CpG islands that are not at the star site of known genes. They are interspersed in the genome. They're sometimes called orphan CpG islands. Now, this is a little bit of an older review. I'm not sure how many of them have been assigned now, but a lot of them were considered putative star site of non-coding RNAs. And so the enrichment of CpG island at the star site of gene is something that has been known for a very long time. It was actually initially observed because of a technical property. Because of the enrichment in CpGs that are rare across the rest of the genome, this means that around the CpG island there is a concentration of restriction enzymes that are normally not present across the genome. So there are restriction enzymes, I think one is called HSA1, if I remember correctly, that are repetition of CpGs. Those restriction enzymes are usually absent from the rest of the genome, but they are enriched in CpG island region. And so those are restriction enzymes that people use long time ago to clone genes, because they realized that when they were using those type of enzymes, it could cut right at the star site of genes when they were starting to clone different coding regions. Okay? So the question, if you put these two things together, we have a large number of promoters that contain, that are enriched in CpGs sequences, so they contain CpG island. We said CpG island can be methylated. The question is whether methylation is linked to the regulation of this promoter. You could imagine that it does play a role. However, one feature that has been known for quite some time is that often these CpG, most of the time, these CpG islands are present in unmethylated state in the genome. So to address this this question and try to understand the role of methylation in regulating promoters that present CpG island at their transcriptional star site, a number of groups, but in particular this paper, try to look at the connection between methylation and regulation of gene expression. So particular paper, what they did was to try to make a genome-wide map of the methylation status of promoters, and then compare the methylation status with the RNA polymerase occupancy and the histone modification for about 16,000 promoters. And by doing that, they were able to reach some general conclusion about the role of methylation in regulating gene transcription. They compared human somatic and germline cells, and there are some differences among those. We'll not get into the details of that. If you're interested, you're welcome to read the original paper, which is in your bibliography. What we'll discuss is the how they approach this problem and the general conclusion they reached in terms of gene transcription. So what they did was to use a tiling microarray approach. So they use something that is called the Nimble Gene Promoter Array. It's a tiling array that was made some years ago by tiling 25,000 promoters. So each of the each of these 24,000 promoters was tiled with 15. Actually, I think I divided this figure in. Yeah, I did. Okay. So what they did is that they take these 24,000 promoters and cover the whole promoter area with different probes. So this is a tiling array like the one that we discussed before. Each of the oligo is a 50 mer, and then they probe this array with genomic DNA that has been selected for being methylated. So they do an immunoprecipitation for anti-methyl cytosine, and then they use the immunoprecipitated material to probe the microarray, and they compare the methylated material with the input, the genomic DNA, which it contains both methylated and unmethylated. They focus, so maybe you notice the fact that they talk about reaching conclusion for 16,000 promoters, whereas the array actually contains, the array is a commercially available array, contains about 24,000 promoters. The reason is because they decided to focus their analysis on only 16,000 promoters for which there was enough data in combining all different databases to support the fact that they were real promoters. So they wanted to exclude things that may have been misannotated promoters or intra-gene promoter. They wanted to focus this analysis on classic validated promoters. And so they used different sources to validate the promoters and focus on the 16,000. And then they validate the results in a number of ways. They did technical validation by PCR, so they performed PCR on their methylated immunoprecipitated material and tested a number of genes that they knew they were either hypomethylated or hypermethylated, and validated the fact that this approach could identify them correctly. They also looked for known genes that are known to be methylated in the results of their array. And so classic things is genes that are imprinted or genes on the X chromosome, the inactivated side of the X chromosome. That is known. Those are known places where methylation plays a role in chromosome compaction and silencing of genes. And so they use these approaches to validate their data. And after they validate their data, they said, okay, now let's start to look at what the promoter looked like and how we can correlate the amount of CpG island that they have with the level of methylation and whether there is a relationship between how much they are methylated with whether they are expressed or not. Okay, so this is their main goal, is to correlate the amount of CpG island with the amount of methylation and with the amount of transcription and see what is the relationship between these three features. So the first thing they did was to classify the promoter based on CpG density. This doesn't have anything to do with the results of their experiment. It's the way in which they analyze them. So for now, they are not even looking at methylation. They're just separating the promoter based on the amount of CpG island that are present. And so they separate these 16,000 promoters based on CpG ratio. And they found that there is, as expected, a population where there is very little, if non CpG island, as well as another region very abundant, where there is a high there is a large number of promoters that contains more CpG island. So these correspond to what before we called the low CG promoters and the ICG promoter, right? So those correspond to the one with a single peak. These correspond to the broad type of promoters. And then they say, okay, so this is fine, but there is also a large number of promoters that are here in between, and it's unclear whether we can classify them as rich in CpG island or devoid of CpG island. So they further separate this population, looking not only at the CpG ratio, but also at the CG content that would be predicted based on frequency in the genome versus the one that they observe in the promoter. And they separate a third population that they call the intermediate CpG. So these are things that, while the low CpG are actually things that don't have CpG island, they may have single CG repeats, but they don't really correspond to the classification of CpG island, which is having about 200, 500, sometimes even 2 kb length of CG repeats clustered together. Those, the high CP are the strong CpG island promoters, so those are clear cases where you have islands of CpG repeats. The one in the middle, there is enough clustering that suggests that there are CpG island, but they are at the borderline, right? And so they call them weak CpG island. They do have some CpG island, but they are not very high in them. And then they analyze the level of methylation that they observe in their microarray experiment based on these three different classes. And so, if you remember from here, So the low CpG are in red, the high CpG are in blue, and then the green is the intermediate. So if you start from the high CpG, those are the ones that are clear, broad type promoters with a lot of CpG island clustered together. The surprising, in a way surprising, but not that surprising thing, is that despite the increase in... Let me explain first what they show in the graph. So they show the level on the y-axis, they show the level of methylation that they observe on the microarray. And then on the x-axis, they show the frequency of CpG island, okay? So note that the scale in these three graphs is different, because the amount of CpG island in the three groups is very different, so the scale is different. Here, the lower one is 0.02, which is almost the higher that you can see on this other graph. Okay. So, and then they want to see if there is a correlation between having more CpG island and having more methylation. They observe this correlation on the low CpG. In this case, you can see that there is a correlation between the amount of CpG and the level of methylation. And then down here, they show the validation of these results with bisulfite sequencing. This is another method to test in vitro DNA methylation. And what this lane represent are different alleles that have been sequenced. So it's sequencing of different alleles. And in black, you see that they observe methylation of the cytosine, in white the cytosine is unmethylated. And you can see that there is an increase from about 60% to 90% in methylation as the CpG ratio increased. However, in general, those are methylated promoters, right? So you find a lot of them in the upper quadrant, which means they are hypermethylated, less of them in the lower quadrant, and the ones that are hypomethylated, it's because they don't have CpG island at all, CpG content at all. The high CG promoters are completely different because here you have a lot of CpG island. As you can see, there is a high clustering of CpG island. However, there isn't a correlation between the level of CpG island and the methylation status. Actually, most of the promoters are in the lower quadrant, which indicates that they are hypomethylated. Which, again, it's surprising if you think, if you expect the correlation between the two features. However, it's not surprising because I told you at the beginning that it was observed for a long time in the genome that those cluster of CpG island that are present at the promoter level are non-methylated. So this corresponds to what people had observed before on single genes. The intermediate class is somehow in the middle. There, it doesn't seem to be that there is a correlation between the amount of CpG island and the methylation status. However, there is a little bit of everything. There are genes that are fully hypomethylated as well as genes where there is a lot of methylation. Okay? So how does this correlate with their level of expression? To answer this question, they perform a chip with POL2. So this is a little bit of an indirect way of testing transcriptional activity. And the reason for doing it this way is that you need to consider the fact that at this time in age, there wasn't yet a way to measure nascent RNA transcription at the genome-wide level. So the GrowSeq and all those different variation of nascent RNA measurement had not been developed yet. So the only way to measure gene expression would have been to do RNA-seq. But that would have included a large bias due to the fact that they were not measuring only the nascent RNA formation, but also the stabilization of the RNA in the cytosol and so on and so forth. So they use an alternative approach which correlates well with gene expression, but it's not perfect, which is to do a chip with POL2 and say, okay, if a gene is active, so their assumption is if a gene is active, POL2 is bound to it. If a gene is inactive, the POL2 is not bound there. So they did a ChIP-seq for POL2, and obviously they found two populations of genes, large number of promoters that in their definition are inactive in the sense that they don't have POL2, the red ones. And then another population of genes that are active because they are marked by POL2 binding. And the interesting thing is that if they look at the frequency of the different classes that we discussed before in here, they found that about 66% of the high CpG promoters are in this green area, so they are active. And this again fit with what was generally known. If you remember yesterday when we discussed them, I said those broad genes are usually housekeeping genes. They are active. It correlates well with the fact that they seem to be hypomethylated. And this is different from low CpG island, where only 11% of them are in the active population. And again, this fits well with what we discussed yesterday. Those seem to be genes that are more tissue-specific, inducible genes, so they are active only at specific times in specific cell types. Okay. Then they went further and used this data to try to correlate the CpG island content with the level of expression. And so they first look at low CpG promoters, and they observed that there is no correlation. So these are usually, even though they have very little CGs, the ones that are there are methylated. But this doesn't seem to have an effect on transcription. So there is no difference if you compare pol minus and pol plus. The level of methylation doesn't affect the whether the genes are in the active or inactive status. The situation is different in the in this population that has a higher CpG island content. There is an inverse correlation between the level of methylation and the number of promoters that you find in either categories. So this is basically what you would expect. If you think about methylation and what is known about methylation, methylation usually associates with repression. So you would expect that the more methylation there is, the less expression. And so the less genes you find with positive POL2 binding, and the more you find that are instead inactive because POL2 is not there, right? The interesting thing about this, the separation between the high and the intermediate ones, is that the correlation between the level of methylation and whether the genes are expressed or not expressed is more evident in the intermediate group. So in the intermediate group, you can see that the level of methylation is much lower for the active genes than it is for the non-active genes. So that's the relationship that you would expect for genes that are regulated through methylation. The more methylation you see, the less expression you see. This is not the case for the ICP. So the ICP seems to be generally unmethylated. However, if you compare the level of methylation with the fact that they are positive or negative, you can see that even the one that are inactive, so even the one that are turned off at that particular time, they don't have POL2, they are still hypomethylated. They don't have increased methylation. Okay? And so one of the questions, and is not fully understood yet, is why these genes are hypomethylated even in the situation in which they are turned off. And so in order to try to understand this, address this question, what they did was to check the histone modification status of these promoters. And so they did the same experiment they did before, but this time instead of comparing with the POL2 presence, they compare with the H3K4 methylation. H3K4 methylation is a marker of active gene transcription. And so what they found is that obviously there are in the POL2 plus group, the one of the active genes, there is much more H3K4 methylation than in the negative one. And that's what you would expect. Active genes have more H3K4 methylation. Inactive genes have less H3K4 methylation. The interesting thing is that this population, the POL minus population, actually has a bimodal distribution. And if you look at this and superimpose the different type of promoters, you see that there is a big difference. The ICP that are inactive, so the ICP that are that don't show POL2 binding, so they are considered to be inactive, have a much higher level of H3K4 methylation than inactive promoters of the other two classes. And so this indicates that these promoters are probably in a poised transcriptional status where the chromatin is already modified, the histone modification are already established, even though POL2 is not bound yet and they're not being transcribed at that specific time. Okay? So the conclusion that we can derive from this this study is that well, there are obviously different CpG content that are associated with promoter with different architecture. The high CpG promoters are mostly unmethylated. And this corresponds to the fact that they are enriched for active genes. They correspond to almost all the housekeeper, the constitutively expressed genes fall in this category. The low CpG promoter instead are mainly tissue-specific inducible promoters, and those are unlinked to the methylation. So they have very little CGs. The ones that are there are methylated, just like the one that you find all across the genome, but this has nothing to do with transcriptional regulation. The intermediate class is where the methylation seems to be playing a role in transcriptional regulation. And this is because it reflects POL2 recruitment and expression. And then the last thing is that these inactive ICP, which are still in an open conformation, they seem to be poised for transcription. Now, the question is why they're hypomethylated, and this is not fully understood, but one of the hypotheses this author present and other people have been looking into is the idea that actually the modification of the histone are actually there also to prevent the methylation. So the conformation of the chromatin in that particular state is important to avoid that the promoter gets fully methylated and shut off. Okay. Now, does this mean that the promoter of genes that are the broad type, the high CG content, are always unmethylated? The answer is no. There are some cases that they are found normally methylated, and there may be a role for methylation in regulating their transcription. But there is also a pathological aspect to it, because these if promoters that are normally in this open state and they are kept hypomethylated are aberrantly methylated, this is linked to disease development, and in particular is seen in cancer, where often promoters of tumor suppressor genes that in normal cells are hypomethylated so that the tumor suppressor gene is active and inhibits cell growth, then in cancer they become hypermethylated, and this inhibits transcription and therefore can have a pathological role. Okay. The last thing to discuss about methylation is why does methylation leads to transcriptional repression, and there are different hypotheses about this that are not mutually exclusive. The one that has been well studied in the context of gene silencing and imprinting is the idea that actually the methylation of the DNA contributes to the chromatin compaction and the formation of a very closed chromatin state. However, there are also more specific hypotheses. One that was initially considered more prevalent was the idea that that some transcription factor cannot bind to DNA if the C is methylated. So those would be transcription factors that have C and Gs in their binding site, and that can bind when the sequence is hypomethylated. However, if the gene, if the promoter gets methylated, then they cannot bind anymore. And so these are not a lot, but there are a few transcription factors that have transcription factor binding site that have the right presence of CAGs, and these are examples of transcription factor that are known to be methylation sensitive. So that's in partly responsible for transcriptional repression. However, the broader reason why methylation affect transcription is because there are transcriptional repressors that can specifically bind to methylated DNA. So MECP1 and MECP2 are example of chromatin remodeling enzymes that have a repressor function on gene expression. And people have found that these particular chromatin remodelers bound to methylated DNA. So they are recruited only when the DNA is methylated. And so this is a broader way to regulate transcription, because this is specific to some single transcription factor, whereas this is a broader mechanism that can be used by a larger number of promoters. And these also explain why the density of the CpG island on the promoters are important for the correlation between methylation and gene expression, because there is a density effect. So it's not one specific transcription factor binding site that is affected, but it's the fact that if there is enough methylation, then there is enough of these chromatin remodelers that are recruited, and those can remodel the entire chromatin structure of the promoter. Okay? Question about CpG? Yeah.
Most of CpG clusters are hypomethylated or hypermethylated?
Hypomethylated.
Okay.
Okay, so a few slides about nucleosome positioning. So this is a very large area of investigation, and we don't have time to go through a lot of the details and the work that has been done by many labs studying nucleosome positioning. But I thought I would just mention a couple of things that fit in this idea of promoter architecture regulating the chromatin status and how different type of promoters are present in nature. So this is a figure from a paper. I don't know why today they get cut, but the idea is that people have started to look at what is the nucleosome occupancy of promoter and try to compare promoters of different types and see if there was any difference. And so this is one example of such studies. As you can see from here in yellow, sorry, you missed the legend, but in yellow they are the broad type of promoters. So the high CpG rich promoters, and then this one, the dark one here, are the single peak, the tissue inducible genes. So if you look at DNA hypersensitivity, you see that the CpG rich promoter seem to be generally open. So DNA hypersensitivity assay allows you to see whether the chromatin is in an open state or not. And so the presence of a peak of DNA hypersensitivity suggests that this is a nucleosome-free region, because the absence of the of nucleosome compaction allows the DNAs to cut and so to be detected. Same thing if you look at different type of histone, there seems to be a difference in the composition of these promoters in terms of type of nucleosome, and also in the presence of the nucleosome themselves. So there seems to be less nucleosome around the transcription star site in the case of the broad type. So there have been a number of studies that have been looking at the how the nucleosome positioning correlates with different type of promoters and gene expression. And this is one of those where they have tried to look at nucleosome positioning genome-wide, and to make, again, same thing than the methylation. Use genome-wide approaches to make a genome-wide map of where the nucleosomes are, and then correlate the positioning of the nucleosome with the transcriptional status of the genes. The difference here is the approach, because they're looking at nucleosome rather than methylation. And so the way to look at nucleosome is to generate mononucleosomes. And this can be done using an enzyme that is called MNase. The way in which this works is the MNase is the micrococcal nuclease, can cut only when the nucleosomes are... It cannot cut the DNA that is wrapped around the nucleosome. So cutting with the MNase allow you to separate single nucleosome. And then you remove the histone from the nucleosome, you deproteinize, and then you have a piece of DNA that is exactly the piece of DNA that is wrapped around the nucleosome. If you sequence this piece of DNA from both sides, what you get is the border of the nucleosome, no, the border of the sequence that is wrapped around the nucleosome, and then by inference you can assume that the middle of the nucleosome is in the middle of this sequence. So that's how this approach works. They do, they prepare mononucleosome from the cells, and then they separate all these DNA fragments, they sequence them, deep sequencing from both ends, pair ends, and then they use this information to deduct where the nucleosomes are. And so there are two different cases, one where the nucleosome is in a fixed position. So in each of the sequencing results that you are getting, the position of the nucleosome is always in the middle of very overlapping sequences, and you end up with a very short, small peak. Or there can be cases that it's where the nucleosome is moving around, it's not in a fixed position. And so depending on the cells that you are sequencing, you find it slightly on the right or slightly on the left. So these are called phased nucleosome. So they are in phase, they have a fixed position. The other one are unphased because they're not clearly positioned, they can move around. Okay. So by doing this type of experiment, people have reached the conclusion that different type of promoters present a different nucleosome occupancy. And so if we look at if they look at constitutive genes, so those are the highly expressed genes, the class that contains the housekeeping genes. As we said before, those are genes that are rich in CpG island. If we look at the nucleosome status of these genes, they usually present a nucleosome-free region. So this is a promoter conformation where you have nucleosome all the way to the minus one position, so one nucleosome away from the transcriptional start site. Then they have a nucleosome-free region, which is also sometimes called NDR, or nucleosome-depleted region. And then they have other nucleosomes that start from the plus one position downstream of the transcriptional start site. So this suggests that the core promoter is actually exposed, which corresponds to what we have seen before, that on those type of genes, you see hypersensitive DNA site right at the transcriptional start site. Okay? The situation is different for regulated genes, genes that are inducible. Those, when they are repressed, they present unphased nucleosomes. So the nucleosome cannot be found in a fixed position. However, the situation changes when they start to be regulated, because at this point, the promoter opens up, and we'll look how that happens. And then you find at this point that the nucleosome becomes start to be in a more regular phases, because the plus one nucleosome, this plus one and minus one has nothing to do with the plus one nucleotide. Is the plus one is the first nucleosome after the transcriptional start site, and minus one is the first nucleosome before the transcriptional start site, okay? And so that basically is correlates with the assembly of the RNA pool 2 and the pre-initiation complex on the transcriptional start site. When they are assembled, the position of the nucleosome gets fixed and the phase becomes more regular. So if we want to summarize these things in terms of the different type of promoter architecture that we saw before, the constitutive genes are the one with a high content of CpG island. They are the broad type of promoter, many different transcriptional star site peaks. Those present a nucleosome-free region. And this nucleosome-free region can be established by a number of ways. There are cases where it has been shown that it depends on the sequence itself of the promoter. Other cases where it seems to be related to the binding of specific transcription factors on the border, on the boundaries of the nucleosome-free region. But in any case, these are genes where the chromatin is always open, okay? Whether they are expressed or they are not expressed. Even when they are inactive, as we saw before, they are non-methylated and these, the nucleosomes are opened up. The different, the other case is the regulated region, the sharp promoter corresponding to low to nothing, no content of CG island. In this case, the nucleosomes are mostly unfazed. They cover the promoter, and then they get removed, they get displaced, evicted when transcription needs to occur. These are just a couple of summary slides about the characteristic, the features of these two type of promoters. Again, same thing we have already said many times. In the ICG, they are highly expressed, they are housekeeper, they mostly bound by, one thing we didn't discuss is that they're mostly bound by ubiquitous transcription factor, whereas the other one are mostly bound by tissue-specific transcription factor. And then there is a different content in the type of histones that are present, but we don't really have time to get into the details of all the different histone variants, so that's something that we'll leave it for another time, okay? And this is for the low CG promoters. Again, they are tissue-specific, the inducible. Normally, they have TATA. In this case, the nucleosome opens up, is evicted just when they are expressed. There is not a clear nucleosome-free region present at all times. And this is the same thing, just in model format. Okay, so can I keep going? You are still with me? So we'll try to finish not too late. Okay. Last topic for the day, RNA polymerase pausing. So if you think about the genes that are regulated, the inducible genes, where you have a situation where you need to change from a condition in which the gene is covered by nucleosome and it's not accessible to RNA polymerase to a situation where the chromatin opens up and then chromatin then O2 binds to it and start to express. Those are inducible genes in the sense that they respond to some kind of signal. The signal can be anything, can be a hormone, can be a drug, can be nutrients availability. Those are genes that are activated in response to a signal. There are actually two different models that we can think of, that they are both existing. The first model is one where the stimuli, which is here, the stimulus, which is here presented with the arrow, is the starting event that leads to chromatin opening and then transcriptional activation. The second model is different in the sense that the stimulus happens only at the end. So the chromatin remodeling happens prior to the stimulus and the gene is in a status that is poised to be activated. Okay, so this example this example corresponds to a gene in yeast, in Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which respond to, if I remember correctly, it's the 4-5, so it should respond to the availability of phosphate. So when there is not enough phosphate in the cells, then the gene needs to be expressed. And so it responds to stimuli that have to do with starvation and availability of nutrients in the medium. When this condition occurs, what happens is that this transcription factor 4-4 binds to its response element. It brings with it chromatin remodeling enzymes that will change the chromatin status, open up the chromatin, and then once the promoter has been opened up, then POL2 can bind and transcribe. The difference, the other case, I don't remember which gene is this. It's a Drosophila Hitchcock protein. So this is the prototype of genes that are regulated by POL2 pausing. So those are genes that where the remodeling of the chromatin happens prior to any stimuli. And the chromatin is in such a state that Pol2 can bind. It associates with the pre-initiation complex. It starts elongated, but then it stops. And then it can resume transcription when the stimulus arrives. So the difference, in both cases, you need chromatin remodeling enzymes. And this is a major difference between, if we think about what we just said a minute ago, the two different type of genes, the one that are always with the open nucleosome positioning and the one that are in the unfazed state. The second type clearly depends on the presence of ATP-based chromatin remodeling activity, because you need enzymes that will change the chromatin status. The first one don't really need that. So in both cases, you need chromatin remodeling. However, in this particular case, Pol2 can bind, and then it stays there. So the main difference between these two models is that is the timing. These are genes that can be activated extremely fast, because they are ready to go. Everything has already happened. The chromatin has opened up, the Pol2 has been loaded. It works because it started to transcribe the first 50 nucleotides or so, and then it stops there and it's ready to go. And that's why it was initially studied in the context of heat shock response, because the heat shock response is a very fast response. You have the stimuli and then right away transcription happens. Those are slower type of responses where you don't really need to activate the gene within a minute or even less. You have time to reprogram the cell to a different nutritional status. Okay? So the interesting thing is that RNA Pol2 posing has been found as a broader way of regulated expression than initially thought. So initially it was studied in the context of heat shock genes and other genes that, as I said, need to be very quickly regulated. However, more recent studies suggest that the use of RNA Pol2 to regulate transcription is very widespread and is associated with all kinds of different genes. So what is Pol2 posing? We can go a little bit in the details of it. First of all, something about the nomenclature. So you can use this review. There is a review in your folder from Edelman and John Liss, who have done most of the work on RNA Pol2 posing. And it's a good review that tells you all about the specifics of RNA Pol2 posing. And one thing they spend some time on is to discuss the nomenclature and how you differentiate between different status of Pol2. So the real posing, it happens when Pol2 start associate with the chromatin, with the promoter, gets activated, start elongating, and then it stops at the pose region, which is usually about 50 nucleotides downstream of the transcriptional start site, and is ready to restart. So as shown here, the posed RNA Pol2 is particular in the sense that it's fully competent to resume elongation. So it's really a posing state where nothing gets disassembled, the RNA molecule stays in the channel ready to be, so that the transcription can continue, but the enzymatic reaction itself is posed for some time. This is different than the case of arrested Pol2. Sometimes you find it called arrested, sometimes you find it called stalled, but their argument is that actually all these different states should be called stalled, and then depending on what is the status of Pol2, you differentiate between pose that is ready to start again and arrested, which happens sometimes in response to shock or defect in problems with the replication, situation in which the RNA polymerase gets arrested somewhere in the middle of the transcriptional process. And this one is not right. is not ready to resume. It can resume, but it can do that only if there are additional factors such as TF2S that gets recruited and managed to restart the process again. And then the terminating RNA pol 2 is the pol 2 that stops because it's finished transcribing and it's in the process of being being released. So those are all the stalled type of RNA polymerase, which is also different than the poised polymerase. The poised polymerase is the one that is recruited to DNA but has not started to transcribe yet. So there it's engaged on the promoter but has not started to generate the RNA template. Okay, so the one we'll focus on is the poised pol 2 because this is the mechanism that is used to regulate transcription. And the way in which it works is that, as we discussed before, we start with a repressed promoter. So we're talking about inducible promoters. It's usually in a repressed state. Somehow chromatin gets remodeled. And then the pre-initiation complex is recruited. Pol 2 is associated with the pre-initiation complex, and then transcription starts. So Pol 2 starts to move and to generate the RNA template, but then it stops in position around 50, 60, more or less. And so one interesting thing about this status is that it's extremely stable. So we discussed a little bit yesterday about the dynamic feature of the pol 2 association with the promoters and transcription factor and the fact that everything is on and off. This is different. This is a situation that is different in the sense that once the pol 2 complex is assembled and has started to transcribe, then it becomes extremely stable. And it can wait there for quite some time. And so this is a way also to stabilize the transcriptional initiation, because once you have assembled everything, you stop in a situation where pol 2 doesn't disassemble. Even if the transcription factor upstream are on and off, the transcription, the RNA polymerase itself is there. It's ready to go and it's stable. The poising is mediated by factors that are associated with pol 2. They're called DSAIF and NELF. And then the poising is released because of post-translational modification of these factors. So there is a kinase that is called PTFB that can phosphorylate them and lead to the start again of RNA pol 2 transcription. The one of these two factors, I think, yeah. So the two pose-inducing factors are called NELF and DSIF. They are slightly different in the sense that DSIF, it's a highly conserved molecule from bacteria to human. After the, it is required for the posing, but after posing is released, the SIF stay attached to RNA pol 2 and keep moving with the RNA pol 2. This is different than NELF, which is also a posing factor, is required for posing. However, when it's the posing is released, NELF is detached, and if it stays, it would inhibit pol 2 moving. Okay. So, as I said, what has been observed is that RNA posing is used as a transcriptional regulatory mechanism, not only for heat shock gene, as initially thought, but for a large number of metazoan genes. And these type of results have been, this type of conclusion have been achieved by experiment in which they performed pol 2 ChIP-seq genome-wide, and then they look at the location of pol 2. And what they found, so a posed gene looks like this, an active posed gene looks like this, where you see pol 2 binding all across the coding region because there are molecules of pol 2 that are moving along and they are transcribing the gene. But there is also a lot of RNA pol 2 that is posed at the transcriptional start site. If you do this type of analysis genome-wide, they found that the enrichment of RNA pol 2 on the transcriptional start site of genes is very widely expressed. So this is a heat map where on the y-axis are represented all the 16,000 genes. And you can see that there is a peak, a very strong enrichment in RNA-Pol2 binding on a large number, more than half of the genes. Okay? So RNA polsing is used by a large number of genes. Now, one problem of these experiments is that what you're looking at is where Pol2 binds. However, if you think about what we said before about the different nomenclature, there are different type of conditioning which Pol2 can be found stuck in different position. Not the Pol2 ChIP-seq doesn't tell you anything about the status of the Pol2, whether it's ready to resume or it's not ready to resume. It cannot differentiate between arrested, paused, terminating. Okay, you just see the only thing you see is that Pol2 is there. You don't see whether it's in a ready to go state or not. However, this can now be assessed with experiments such as the GrowSeq or the StartSeq, because these are experiments that we discussed, I think, the week before, where you measure nascent mRNA transcription, and the way in which you do it is that you stop the cells, the transcription in the cells with cold, you isolate the nuclei in cold, and then you start transcription again. So because you start transcription again, only transcription from the post Pol2 that is ready to start can resume. Transcription from RNA Pol2 that is just stuck somewhere but is not ready to start again cannot be measured by GrowSeq. And so most of these experiments have now been validated with the GrowSeq approaches, and the type of results are similar. So a good amount of posing that has been observed by Pol2 ChIP-seq was then validated by GrowSeq. Okay? And so by doing this type of experiment, people have identified different classes of genes. So there are genes like the one we looked at before, where the there is transcription occurring, but also a lot of posing. And those are considered posed but expressed genes. There are also genes that are posed but inactive, so they're fully inactive, there is no transcription happening, but there is a lot of Pol2 in a posing state. And so those are genes that are ready to be activated. Those are genes that are basally activated, but they're ready to be activated even more. And the way to measure, to give a number, so you can look at all these genes and look at the profile, or you can try to give them a numerical evaluation of posing. And so to do that, they use something that is called posing index. The posing index is calculated as a ratio of the level of Pol2 that is found on the promoter compared to the level of Pol2 that is found across the gene. So you just calculate the reads. If you are doing RNA-seq, you calculate the reads of the Pol2 in all these different boxes, and then you do the ratio of these versus the other. And so the one that is here is the posed one. And so the higher is the posing index, the more RNA-Pol2 you have here compared to the rest of the body of the gene. And so a posed but expressed gene has a posing index that is quite high. However, it's not as high as a posed but inactive gene, because here you really have nothing across the body of the gene, so the posing index gets higher, whereas here you still have transcription occurring over the body of the gene, and so the posing index is slightly lower. If you look at genes that are fully active, so those are the housekeeping genes, the ones that are active all the time, they're not regulated. Here you see Pol2 all across the gene. There is nothing that accumulates at the transcriptional start site, and so the posing index is extremely low because there is not an enrichment at the 5' compared to the rest of the gene. If you combine all the genes together and look at how these classes are represented in cells, they found that the posed express and the posed unexpressed together, they are about 30% of all genes, so there is quite a large percentage of gene that is regulated by RNA polymerase pausing, whereas the other are the rest of the percentage. Okay, so what is the role? Yes.
Why should the inactive genes be paused?
So, if you have a gene that is completely shut off, those are genes that, in order to activate, you need to first open up the chromatin and then allow RNA-Pol2 to bind. The ones that are inactive but paused are there ready to go. So that they correspond to the example of the heat shock genes. Okay. And actually, so the question is also why to go through the effort of using this mechanism? And so there are a number of different reasons why RNA-Pol2 pausing may be important. The one that we have discussed just now is the idea that you can rapidly activate transcription. And so everything is there, ready to go, and then you can just start transcription from different different genes very rapidly. Another reason that has been shown in some contexts is the fact that it's a way to make transcription dependent from specific signal transduction pathways. Since the regulation of pausing of the release of RNA-Pol2 depends on kinase activity, on PTFB kinase activity, if you have signal transduction pathways that can activate PTFB, those can directly regulate transcription without the need of activating other transcription factors. Okay? And so this is the case of signaling. Another hypothesis that has been discussed in some cases is the fact that this RNA-Pol2 pausing step could be a checkpoint mechanism, where instead of proceeding through the whole gene transcription to realize that transcription is not working very well, you just transcribe the first 20, 50 base pair. And then there is this pausing step. The cell is able to evaluate whether transcription is happening or not. If there are defects in the RNA polymerase activity or the assembly of the complex, then there is time to get rid of that paused RNA-Pol2 and start with a new molecule. This is not something that has been proved completely, but it's a reasonable model. The one that is also been proved, and that there has been a lot of work on, is the idea that the RNA-Pol2 pausing, it's important to establish, to change the chromatin structure of the promoter. And so I just want to show you a couple of data points about this. Let's see what time is it. Yeah. So the idea is that the establishment of the RNA-Pol2 pausing may be important to establish the open chromatin conformation itself. So it's kind of like, what is the chicken and what is the egg? Like, what comes first, right? On one side, you need opening of the chromatin to be able to recruit the RNA-Pol2. On the other side, there may be feedback events in by which the establishment of the RNA-Pol2 complex and the stabilization of it in the post-conformation, it's important to keep the promoter in this open state and establish a fixed chromatin state which lead to an open, available chromatin conformation that allows the transcription to keep going at a higher rate. So the two things may be feeding into each other. And this type of studies, so the idea is that the establishment of stable Pol2, so this goes back to the idea that once transcription starts, the Pol2 complex becomes very stable, differently than when it's just at the beginning, when it's assembling on the pre-initiation complex. This helps changing the status of the promoter and lead to a stable open conformation. And so the fact that the idea is that the fact the presence of the stable RNA pol 2 there will inhibit the reassembly of nucleosome into the promoter area. And so this may not be critical for the first round of transcription, but it may be important to allow the subsequent round of transcription where you keep things in the open conformation and you allow things to keep going at a faster rate. And so these type of experiment have been, this type of conclusion have been reached mostly because of experiment where people try to down-regulate the posing factors and see what happens. So if we go back, we said there are two posing factors, there is NELF and DDSIF. They are required for posing, and then at least NELF has to be released for transcription to occur. So in the process of studying RNA pol 2 posing, people said, okay, so if NELF is a negative factor, it's a negative factor that induces posing, if we remove NELF from the cells, what is going to happen? And what they expected was that you would get much more transcription. You remove the posing factor, RNA pol 2 is not posed, and you get a lot of RNA pol 2 elongating. What they found was exactly the opposite. And so for a while it was a head scratcher. It was difficult to explain why that was happening. And at the end, through a number of studies, they reached the conclusion that that NELF is there to help establish the posing, but that is required to prevent the nucleosome from going back and closing the promoter area. And so if you remove NELF, this nucleosome is not kept away anymore. And so loss of NELF mediate lower levels of RNA pol 2 rather than higher levels, and also increase promoter histone occupancy. So when you remove NELF, you don't get more transcription because actually the promoter closed up. If you look at nucleosome occupancy in NELF knockout cells, you find that all of a sudden the nucleosome is again positioned over the promoter area, and that it's inhibitory through the recruitment of new RNA pol 2 molecules as well as transcriptional activation. And so, yeah, this is the same thing. You don't recruit pol 2 anymore, and so the genes actually becomes downregulated, and you get the decreased gene expression rather than the increased gene expression that it was expected. And with this, I'm done. Actually, I was faster than I thought. So, if there are questions or things where I went too fast, I'm happy to go back and repeat. Yeah.
Is there a gap longer in between posing RNA pol 2?
A what?
Yeah, a gap longer between pol 2.
Which sense?
RNA pol 2 is posed.
Yep.
It is the same RNA pol 2 fixed until the.
Oh, I see. In the complex itself,
yes.
Whether it keeps turning over or whether it's the same molecule. Yeah, no. So it's a stable complex. That's what was surprising of some of those initial results. That if you look at the RNA pol 2 that is recruited over the pre-initiation complex, that is very unstable until the whole complex is assembled and until the first few nucleotides are transcribed. Once the first few nucleotides are transcribed, we are talking about engaged pol 2, and then it's posed in the posing state, and that becomes very stable. So it's the same complex that stays there. If I remember correctly, they have observed it to be stable for even hours, and so it's there, stable, ready to go, which is different than the transcription factor upstream, which binding is very kinetic and they keep detaching. So that's also one of the idea that
if he is not upgraded in the time of the stability, then we don't start to
too close up, yes. Unless there is a new, probably before that happens, there is a new molecule of RNA, Pol2, that gets recruited. So if you look, it's not just one single molecule. If you look at the RNA, the Pol2 ChIP-seq data, you really have very strong recruitment, which probably suggests that there is more than one molecule of RNA in that condition. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.